Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Shoes Off Inside with me, May Lee, Kelly Hu, Tamlin Tamita. How is everyone? It's been a little while since our last episode.
It has been, but good. Still filming here in Atlanta, so
Everything going well in
your
Atlanta.
Your background is beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
It's lovely.
Amazon.
Amazon. That's what it's Amazon.
It's very, very appropriate for the season. Spring has sprung. Happy Easter, happy Passover, Ramadan, Kareem, and all the things are blooming.
Exactly.
Blooming and melting here in California.
I know. So my God, it finally stopped raining after, like, I seriously was starting to build an ark in my backyard. But now it's
blooming, all flowers.
Yeah. I know. I actually do want to go to the super blooms because it's supposed to be spectacular.
But do go during the week.
Exactly. What do you mean go? Where are you go for this?
Antelope Valley, up the 5, up the 14, to U.S. government parks, and then they will give you literally a super bloom map. There was an article, or there was just a thread on Facebook about where do I go? And people are going, check that out.
So, but you're right.
Is this only in California or everywhere?
California.
I think it's California. Yeah.
For sure.
Just because, again, because we've had the rains and it's really everything is thriving right now. So, the poppy fields are supposed to be the most popular. But you're right. I should go during the week, like I have time. So one thing I want to mention is that, Kelly, you just won an award recently.
Congratulations, girl! Yay! It's like you popped up on the feed and we're going, what is this?
I know. Tell everyone.
It's called the Maverick Award. It's called the Maverick Award, and it was given to me by Nova Fest, their film festival up in Fairfax, Virginia, and the Stan Lee Foundation. So it's called the Maverick Award. It was very nice, very sweet. It was a great opportunity for me to go to Fairfax and see my brother and his family and meet his little dog. I got to meet his little dog.
I didn't know your brother lived in Virginia. Well, that was kind of a coincidence that you went there to get the award and your brother lives there. So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations again. And Maverick. Hello.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely the Maverick.
Just to remind everybody how, long and what a wonderful career you've had. And it's like, you were there when I was there and there were not a whole lot of social media didn't exist and Asian America didn't find its voice, really in terms of, just supporting and critiquing. And all the conversations that are going on you are definitely.
That's right. So exactly. So don't any of you forget it. Tamlin and Kelly are absolute mavericks. Okay. Tamlin, speaking of Maverick, you have been involved in the project Defining Courage, which is that wonderful documentary that David Ono, who is a reporter, an anchor, he's an anchor here in LA for ABC. Mm-hmm. But he put together this incredible interactive documentary on the Japanese American soldiers of World War II. Mm-hmm. And so you went to Hawaii, right, to do a screening there, and then you're going to go back, right?
Yes. So I went to Kelly's homeland of Oahu, Hawaii, on March 18th, and that show sold out by, we announced the show in middle of February around Valentine's Day, and we sold out in 2 weeks.
Not surprising.
And then so the March 18th show sold out, and then so we announced the April 23rd show at 7 o'clock. That sold out, so we announced a 3 o'clock show Sunday, April 23rd. So that's why we're going to Hawaii at the Hawaii Theater to perform this immersive experience about the 100th and 442. American soldiers of Japanese descent who fought in France, Germany, Italy, Okinawa. And again, the story is that their families were incarcerated in prison by the American government while they're fighting for liberty in those countries. And a little known fact is that the 100th 442 opened the gates of Dachau, the death camp, the Nazi death camp, alongside an African-American artillery battalion. So two units of men who were discriminated against opened the concentration camp gates And then the U.S. military said, thank you, boys, literally, and said, yeah. Okay, picked your time.
Yes.
And it's just the cockles and shoulders.
That's why everything that was documented.
Should know.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kelly.
Also, we should know that the 442 is the most decorated battalion in history.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So this is all part of history that is still so unknown and so, you know, swept under the rug.
It is the depth of our history, and this is literally critical race theory in action. So this is why our stories, you know,
just need to be told.
So that's the important thing. But thank you for mentioning it.
Yeah, no, I mean, because I saw it when it was when he performed it here in LA, and that's when I saw you there as well. It was the most stunningly beautiful, moving, informative, educational, you know, kind of interactive performance I've ever seen. It was.
You say interactive. What happens exactly? How does that work?
So I can tell you really quickly, David went to France, Italy, Germany, Okinawa to film these places and meet with elderly French citizens and Italian citizens who remember being rescued by these American soldiers who look like us, Japanese faces. That's why I don't understand. But they were children when they were rescued. And so David put together this collage of stories and he narrates it. So it's like showing my videography about my trip there, telling the stories. And then he also has a choral group and a piano and a cello accompany it with live music.
Oh,
so it's very, it's very immersive. It's like,
yeah, it's not totally
just
immersive.
A documentary.
Yeah.
Right. You get to see the person filming, you know, telling the story about him going there. So it's really quite something special.
Yeah,
and then the added bonus is that David invites the vets. They're 90, 100 years old. And so we had four of them at the screening that May went to. We had three in Hawaii. We'll have a set for the 3 o'clock show as well as the 7 o'clock show this coming Sunday.
I mean, you're getting very emotional during the performance, right? Because of the stories, right? And then when they bring on the vets who are still survivors, I mean, I lost my shit. I couldn't speak because I was so moved by it. I mean, like, think about it right now. I'm like getting like emotional. It's so powerful. It's so well done. And I knew it was going to sell out in Hawaii. And I was shocked when you told me it was only going to be one performance. I'm like, oh, come on. You've got to do more than that.
I told them, I go, it's a Sunday. You should have a matinee. And they did not listen to me until they did. And then I go, told you something. So,
Oh, no, good.
The Hawaii Theater is 1,400 seats.
Yes.
So
you know.
It's awesome.
And it's a gorgeous theater. There's not a bad seat in the house.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Yeah. I'm so glad that it's doing so well. Because David, I know, worked so hard and for so long on this project. Yeah. It was blood, sweat, and tears, according to him. I'm happy that it's doing well. It needs to go all over the place, honestly. Yeah. So,
along with the other stories, you know, the Korean American women who were in World War II. It's like, oh my God, the Chinese American battalion. It's like, yes, there's so many stories.
Many stories.
And it's like, this is just, you know, a kernel of the seed. So,
well, yeah. I mean, you know,
you're only doing it in like Hawaii and California. You're like preaching to the choir. These kind of things need to go to.
There are plans.
Like Middle America, where people don't know the history.
Good point, Kelly.
There are plans. I just can't tell you right now, but in later episodes, I will keep you up to date.
Okay. Stay tuned, everyone. That's a nice little teaser. Okay, well, so we have decided to address something that is very hot right now in a bad way. And so we're going to kind of just take this time during this episode to just really dig deep into what's been happening and what's been the talk of the news lately. And that has to do with the series Beef on Netflix and one of the actors, David Cho, who plays Isaac in the series. Now, gosh, where do we even begin, right?
I think we could begin with how awesome the series is.
Yes,
I know, that's why I was hesitating.
Take away from the series.
That's why I was hesitating about where do we begin? Because I don't want to detract completely from the fact that this series Beef, when it came out, it just made an absolute incredible splash immediately because it was so creative. It was so complex. It was digging into issues of rage and anger and repression and intergenerational trauma and loss. I mean, it was, it dug very deep into these issues and a tinge of Asian identity too. But it was a story that didn't have anything to do with being Asian or like the immigrant story. It was just a story that's about humanity and the pain of being human almost that happens to have an all Asian cast. Right. So the beauty of it was, you know, there were many, many positives about this series in terms of representation and then just, you know, just great storytelling. So, yes, I watched the whole series.
Oh, I haven't finished it yet. So don't give it any spoilers.
I won't. But here's the thing. I think the very next day is when this story broke. About David Cho. Right after I had finished the story and I was posting saying, this is a phenomenal
You went boom.
I did a video going, I was like, I just finished Beef. You know, my mind has been blown, right? Because I was that enthusiastic about the series. Then the very next day, the story breaks about David Cho and his antics from 2014. Now, let's just briefly tell everyone, just in case you don't know, in 2014, David Cho was doing a podcast. He had this podcast where he was, you know, pretty raw about things and sort of abrasive and, you know, that kind of thing. So he started talking about a story where he had apparently sexually harassed and raped a masseuse who was working on him. And it was at a legit, you know, spa, apparently. And he basically admits on the show that he was turned on, that he started masturbating. He asked her to do it for him. She refused. And then she forced her to... He forced her to give him basically a blowjob. He took her head. This is all according to him. Right.
In his words.
In his words, in his show. Right. Yes. Now, those clips, interestingly.
Is he telling
enough,
somebody else on the podcast this story? Yes. Or is it just him talking, rambling?
He had a co-host. No. He had a co-host.
Which is Asa Akira, who is a porn star. And then there are three other dudes who were audience, who are on the panel, who are just commenting alongside whatever he was saying.
Yeah.
And are they thinking that this is funny? Has anybody seen it? Nobody's seen it, right? I mean,
people have seen it. People have seen it.
They scrubbed it, but I got to see it. Yeah.
Oh, you did.
Yeah.
So you saw it because I couldn't, they scrubbed it. So I was too late in trying to get to it and watch it. But I heard that she's the one who said, wait a minute, you're admitting to raping her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And he goes, yeah. And I'm sorry, but I'm getting turned on by just telling you this story right now. And it was like, it was total, you know, I don't want to use the bro, you know, the term bro, but it was just like, asshole talk.
It was bro talk. That's what it was. It was like gross locker room bro talk.
There are, you know, there are legitimate bros, and I go, I don't mind bro talk, you know, again, among, but again, that's, it was just asshole talk. It was asshole David Cho talking. I just want to specify that this is asshole, assholish behavior. And he admitted, he even used, and she goes, so you're admitting to being a rapist, a successful rapist.
Yeah.
As like, okay.
Yeah. It
there
was like
you go.
Rapey behavior, right?
Yeah.
It's
so
almost.
Let me ask you, were the other people in the room laughing? Is that why he continued to tell the story?
Yes. And Asa was just like, you know, what? What? But she's the only girl in the room.
And I can imagine she being the only female in the room with four guys who are acting like douchebag bros.
Douchebags, yeah.
She's probably trying to hold her own, but at the same time, if it's David's show and she's the sidekick, let's say, we know how that works, right? Mm-hmm. And then this was 2014, and so I'm sure she was probably feeling like, well, I kind of have to go along with it, but I'm going to try to push back a little bit. Not knowing anything about her, that's, you know, just, but knowing about that kind of environment, I would think that that's probably what she was feeling. But let's go back to him, right? So now, because this has resurfaced, right, because of the success of Beef, a journalist found, you know, this show, and they basically published it again. David apparently is denying that he ever did this. He now is claiming that it was just a story he was telling.
I'm an artist. I fabricated it up.
Yeah.
You know, I was cajoled by the other guys in the room, you know. But seriously, that clip, but then again, and it gets, you know, it just explodes in your face. Our faces, it's like Bobby Lee is accused of doing the same thing with a underage Mexican girl and continuing on to his podcast. David Cho was on his podcast and saying, you know, and now Bobby Lee is retracting that. He said, it was all made up too. It was all made up. So again, two examples.
Wow. I didn't know about Bobby Lee. Wow.
Yeah. You'll find it. So again, it's just this continual, you know, positioning, perpetrating rape culture. And that's what, you know, we're all rallying and trying to discuss, you know, here.
It's our
podcast. There is a rape culture. The fact that there is even a culture out there like that is being, I don't know, I guess that's circulating in America. It's appalling.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, of course, it's appalling. It just has to do with this whole idea of control and toxic masculinity and, you know, conquest, right?
Yeah.
And so whatever form that comes in, and oftentimes when you're talking about conquest or, you know, trying to be misogynistic, it usually, you know, ends up being forceful, you know, unwanted. Yeah. No unwanted. Means no. And apparently this masseuse said no. And he's like,
she said no, but her eyes said yes.
That's what he said. Yes. I mean, but you know, you hear this shit all the time, right? About men saying, oh, she really wanted it,
even though she was saying no.
Yeah. And so this is, you know, yet another example. But there's a woman, Jen Yang, who wrote a blog. She runs Reappropriate, it's a blog about Asian American feminism, politics, and pop culture. So back in 2014, when this show came out, David Cho and admitted this, she actually wrote a blog about it because she was so offended and she couldn't believe that he admitted to this. And of course, nobody really paid attention. So she recently said, well, I guess it's time for me to repost this blog from 2014. Yeah. And she brought up some really fascinating points. And I'm going to just read one section of it. And then I really want to talk about this with you guys. She said, honestly, what most disturbed me here was how David Cho's story caters to a particular subset of the Asian American community. The highly misogynistic counter movement to the Asian American emasculation stereotype that emphasizes the objectification and sexual conquest of women to reinforce Asian American masculinity. It's no coincidence that the show's panel is predominantly Asian American, or that Cho quips early in the segment about Asian American men being seen as non-threatening or not targets of sexual desire. The show targets a subset of Asian American men who are so damaged by society's denigration of their sexuality, itself a problem worth addressing, right? We know that they're wrongheadedly reacting with an exaggerated caricature of locker room bro culture that objectifies and demeans women. This sort of subculture breeds misogyny and allegedly rape. Is not surprising. Here, women are less equal sexual partners and more a means towards a reinforced masculine end. Fascinating, right? So it's almost she's suggesting that someone like David Cho is pushing back and overcompensating for all the stereotypes that exist about Asian men, which we know exists, right? That they're wimpy, they're emasculated, they're not sexually desirable and all of that.
Is she saying that's an excuse? She's not saying that's an excuse. She's just saying that that's what they're doing.
No.
She's not saying it's just that. She's like, this is an example.
She's painting the picture.
She's painting the picture that this is what's happening.
And then another fact is that David Cho mentions that the massage therapist was beautiful and that she was a Black woman. So it really, again, feeds into the anti-blackness of this, you know, event. And also we have to remember this is 2014 that Jen is writing about this, before the Me Too movement,
right,
before Black Lives Matter, and before this real explosion of wonderful Asian American content. So it again contextualizes how on target, how on focus, you know, writers like May and Jen and the other Jen, Rebecca, they're all on point, and they've been following this kinds of story, and now it's coming up to the forefront.
Yeah.
And also the other fact is that David Cho is a magnificent artist. Oh my goodness. This portrait of Senator Obama hung, yes, in the White House. Amazing portrait. It was on the cover of Giant Robot magazine.
Yeah.
And also that he was such a prolific, a wonderful artist that was unrecognized, that this young dude said, can you paint the offices of my company out in Santa Monica? It was this little company called Facebook. And in payment, he got shares. And as soon as that thing went public, he was a gazillionaire. Yeah. So again, money is not his issue.
Tim, or do you think he was an asshole before that?
Who's to say, right? I mean, it seemed like he was a starving artist, but he was also a journalist, apparently. So he kind of wore many hats. But I did think about that too. I'm like, I wonder if his $200 million that he now has because of Facebook shares turned him into a bigger asshole because of money.
Because I'm untouchable.
And power and all of that, right? I mean, it's a terrible combination of money, power, arrogance, you know, and being untouchable. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? What will be really interesting to see in weeks, months, whatever, however long it takes to come is if this woman, this massage therapist, and the Bobby Lee girl actually come forward.
That's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering, but
they do come forward, then we know it's true. But if they don't come forward, it doesn't necessarily mean that it was a joke.
Yeah.
Right.
And again, it's again perpetuating rape culture. It's allowing, you know, men to talk about, I did her, and I forced her to la 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 la. So again, that's the crime.
Let's just do an exercise right now. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt that maybe it did not happen, and it's just a story. That doesn't fucking justify telling a story as horrific as that, as like some fucking creative like concept. That to me is sick in itself, right? For him to think, I'm an artist. I'm telling this story. I'm so creative. What about raping a woman and forcing her to, you know, to commit an act? You know, I mean, it's just like, wow, that's how you justify it. That's, you know,
I mean, and to me, whoever was in the room laughing, egging him on, were not just as guilty, but are still guilty in a way.
They're complicit.
Nobody else called him out on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's
that's not cool.
I think that's always the problem with anything like that or any other type of sort of uncivilized behavior, is the complicit behavior of others around who know. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, it reminds me of the Constance Wu story, right, that she talked about in her book, that she was sexually harassed by a producer from Fresh Off the Boat. And she was too afraid to say anything. And, you know, people knew about it, and yet they still didn't say anything. And to this day, she hasn't really gotten a whole hell of a lot of support, whereas he's still walking around and enjoying himself as a producer and going to parties and events. I see him on Instagram and things like that all the time. And so it's interesting that there's still this culture of acceptance or complicit behavior towards something like this.
In Constance's case, it's a he said, she said, right?
Yeah.
Because there were no witnesses. In this case, it's out there. It's out there.
And he said it. He said
by the perpetrator.
Right.
By the perpetrator.
Right.
Yeah.
By the guy himself.
Yes. Yeah. But here's the thing. So even though he said it, he's now backtracking, saying it was just a story. So now people are saying, well, it might be, on her now to come forward to,
of course,
you know, make the claim, or else, you know, we can't really accept it as fact. even though he's mm-hmm. admitted to it, but now he's backtracking, obviously. So here's my question to you, both beautiful Hollywood, lovely actresses. I posted about this today, and some of the comments on my Instagram, you know, one in particular said, "Why? Where are all the Hollywood people? Why aren't they saying anything?" And this person has a point. If you mm-hmm. look, not really anyone of any name value or recognition has stepped forward to say anything about this. No comment.
Are they talking only people in the Asian community, or are they meaning all of Hollywood?
Well, I'm assuming they're more targeting the API Hollywood community. But even broader, I don't think a lot of people in Hollywood are really commenting on this. Certainly Netflix is staying silent. A24 is staying silent. The cast, other cast members haven't said anything. So I would love your perspective on this. You know, because here's my assumption. I think sometimes Hollywood is really wimpy when it comes to taking a stand on things that are controversial because they're afraid that it's going to come back and burn them. Right. Mm-hmm. So they have to save themselves.
More than anything, they think it might cost them money.
Yeah. Well,
end up costing them money
or a job, right?
Or a job, which is money. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Beef is so successful. Yeah. I mean, huge for Netflix, huge for the Asian community to have this ugly stain on the series would really take away. I think from how awesome a project it is for our community, unfortunately, you know, that this one guy can have that kind of, you know, influence over the success of a show.
But sadly, it already is. People are boycotting the show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a call for a boycott.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wish that wouldn't affect the show because they might not have realized what he had done before casting him. And now this awesome show, you think, Tam? You think everybody knew? I didn't know.
Maybe not everybody, but I think decision makers knew.
Yeah. And what's, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt Kelly's.
No, go ahead.
I think what's interesting is that, so Maze watched it. I know Kelly, you haven't finished it. Me and my love watched it. And I stopped watching it when I said, "Is that David Cho?" And I immediately went, I can't enjoy this anymore. So this is before. So this was in preparation for us to talk about, you know, all the stuff happening in Asian America and Asian American Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander Month is happening next week and we all should be celebrating. And again, this Twitter storm occurred and it was very interesting to see, you know, David Cho trending and then Ali Wong. Since she's the one who seems to be getting the bearing the brunt of this. And it's like, why aren't you blaming Lee Sung Jin or Steven Yuen or A24 or Netflix? Why are you, you know, why are you castigating the woman at the same time that Vanessa Lachey is getting blasted for the poor, what is it called? Love is Blind reunion. I have not seen it, but then it was like trending at the same time.
What is that?
Oh my God. So Love is Blind is this huge reality show. And there was a reunion episode.
Yeah.
And Vanessa and Nick Lachey are the hosts, but she is Vanessa. So, you know, she's half Filipina. And she's shooting in Hawaii. She's the star of NCIS Hawaii. Mm-hmm. You know, she's getting blasted because it feels like the women are the carriers of all this shit. And then the next day it was like, okay. But then Michelle Yeoh gets to be announced that she's going to be in the new Star Trek, whatever Discovery movie. So it's like Asian American women is the targets, but also the high accolades. But it was really interesting to see two Asian women bearing the brunt of all the shit about two specific shows and specifically going on to David Cho. So it's again, it's interesting, the universe that, you know, I happen to look at on my feed, mm-hmm. but why is Ali the one who's, and she's also dating Bill Hader. It's like, yay. But then I just go, why is it the woman? And then for everybody not to say anything and to answer your question in a long way, May, it is about what can I say on Twitter? What can I say? Like, this is a conversation. That is fucked up what David Cho did. It is fucked up about how he perpetuates this, yeah, man, she, you know, she really had a good time and my dick kind of thing. That's not cool. And then for Allie, for Steve, for Lee, for A24, they have to come up with a statement to apologize, to recognize and apologize and, you know, follow your words with action. What the fuck are you going to do to redeem yourself, David Cho? It's like, why don't you, you know, all your salary, just donate it to a domestic abuse shelter, to sexually battered women shelter. It's like, do something with your fucking platform about the shit that you continue to perpetuate.
But here's the thing.
Here,
you know, yes, you would think in a better world, people would admit to their flaws and their mistakes and try to make up for it, right? In the most authentic, genuine way.
Oh, but it's too big.
No, but in this society now, you guys, come on. Everybody just doubles down now.
Yeah.
Everybody just doubles down and they will just fucking lie to the bitter end. Because why? Mm-hmm. Because we've been shown by the powers that be from the top of the food chain, you know.
The very top.
Yeah. That it works. Yeah. You double down and you stick with it and it will work no matter what. Yeah. That's where we're at right now in our society. And that's what like makes me so sad about, you know, the situation now. And then of course the war on women, which we need to talk about because I think this is all related. What you're saying, Tamlin, is absolutely right. Women, for some reason, are the go-to like punching bag.
Target,
right?
Punching bag.
We're the target because we're the easy target to blame. Because we traditionally will not push back and we will not fight back. Clearly, people haven't met the three of us. But anyway, but I think that's a very good point to make. And why is that? You know, and now we're seeing this movement even more so against women, this siege against women and girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's that idea for, you know, what can we do to protect Ali Wong? She's got her, she's an EP, but she's not only EP, executive producer.
Yep.
But why was she the one who was really primarily targeted? And again, you know, the whole idea of this show called Beef, I celebrated it without having watched it first because I go, ooh, this is going to be an interesting show because it totally knocks against the model minority myth.
Exactly.
And it's like, yeah, hello, we're so complex and deep and complicated and fucked up, but beautiful. And
we can get angry. We can get fucking angry.
So,
yeah.
Again, it's the cost of this. And it goes into the conversations about, do we need to separate art from the artist? It's like Bill Cosby, Woody Allen, Kobe Bryant,
right?
You know, all these persons who we really recognize for their artistry, but then it's like, but he's not a good dude. And it's like, So and it's individual choices as to who we watch, who we want to follow, and who, you know, whose games we want to watch. So it's again, very, very complex. And again, when people are doubling down, it's like, I gotta just apologize for my actions. And if you can't accept it, I will work towards becoming a better person.
Yeah.
That's all I can fucking do.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But don't you think that men, I hate this. Men are often so much more forgiven for, you know, their mistakes than women are. Right. I mean, men have made some, you know, very well known. You just named several. Another one is Bill Clinton. Right. He was president and he, you know, obviously had, you know, scandalous behavior, but why is that? Because we still live in a patriarchy. I mean, is it as simple as that?
Yeah.
It must be. I mean, I can't explain how else somebody can get elected president after a scandal like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well Donald Trump, he admitted
for far less.
Yeah. I know. I mean,
strangely in a helmet.
It's true. It's true, though. I mean, look at Donald Trump. I mean, he became president after admitting that he likes grabbing women's pussies. So it's just it's insane. Right. But let's talk about this where we're at then. You know, we have Dobbs that passed, which obviously now makes abortion much more difficult in several states. And now we have Florida saying that abortion is illegal after 6 weeks when women don't even know they're freaking pregnant at that point, unless it's rape or incest. And but the caveat being they have to be able to prove it. They have to, a woman right. or a girl has to be able to prove that they're raped or they're a victim of incest before they're allowed to get an abortion. What the fuck is
How
that?
How do you do that?
Exactly. Why do you, put it on the woman? Why do you put it on the woman who was victimized to begin with? Again, going back to proving, it's always has to be on the woman to have to prove, something happened to her.
And here's the thing. How many young girls who have sex with their some guy, some maybe a one-night stand, maybe their boyfriend or whatever, end up getting pregnant and then will end up claiming that she got raped because she doesn't want to be responsible. I mean, that can happen too. I think a lot of people don't realize that that if a girl ends up having sex with some boy and then maybe is afraid that she got pregnant, can end up blaming a boy who didn't necessarily rape her, maybe had consensual sex, because then it just becomes a he said, she said thing, right? How do you actually prove that you were raped unless somebody is breaking into your house and you're fighting them off and has like a knife to your eye? You know, like, how do you prove? Because not all rape is violent.
No. Correct. There's date rape. There's marital rape. I mean, there's all, rape can come in many different forms, of course. Absolutely. So it's a gray area, but they're trying to make it very black and white. Well, Florida, they're just trying to ban it outright. DeSantis is now I'm just showing my political colors, but I mean, it's not like nobody knew. DeSantis is a fucking moron. He's so evil, you know? But this is serious, though. It's like we have to pay attention to what's going on. And then from the Supreme Court on down, I mean, the Supreme Court scares the shit out of me now with the decisions that they're making and the bias that is showing, so clearly. Clarence Thomas needs to be fired. They need to get rid of that guy. These are the decision makers who are influencing policy that's directly affecting the weakest, right? The most vulnerable.
There's so many. Go ahead.
I was about to say that Lisa Ling did this special once where, she has the most amazing journalism. Like she's on CNN now, but I think this one might have come out on CNN, where she had interviewed women who were forced to, who had babies from their rapists, and then were forced to have visitation to the rapist.
Oh my God.
With their babies.
Oh
I
my
mean,
God.
How crazy is that?
How traumatizing.
What violation? A violation that will just keep on haunting you forever and ever and ever until this kid is grown and no longer, the father can no longer demand visitation. It's absolutely appalling what they are forcing women to do. And here's the thing. You're forcing all of these women to have babies, unwanted children. What about the foster care system? How?
It just...
Horrible.
Who's going to take care of them?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The irony of their policy and their stance is that they say, oh, protect life. It's all about protecting life. Oh, but forget about when they're born. We don't care about when they're born.
Oh, yes.
Because we want our guns. We want
our foster care.
No. It's not just about foster care, but we want our guns. The guns that are used to gun down little children in school. So you want to protect the unborn child. But then you don't want to protect the actual living, breathing children in school because you love
and
your fucking guns so much.
Keep all the books away from them as well.
And take all the books away from them as well. This is where we're at. And it's so maddening and infuriating. But I do see people still sort of turning a blind eye thinking it's all okay. And we can't. talk about being complacent. You know, we cannot be complacent about these things. Tamlin, you wanted to say something before.
Oh, no, there's so many. Yeah, because I think with the three of us just bringing up so much newsworthy news topics that have happened to us collectively over the last week, there's so many thoughts and questions and not answers, but just, you know, discussion.
Yeah.
It's about really bettering the system that's in place. It is about if a young woman has sex with a man and claims rape and because she's pregnant, it's like you have to prove that she's falsifying the story. It's long and it's slow and it's excruciating, but that's what, you know, how do we better this system? I think what's maddening and excruciating is my reaction to vilify, you know, folks like Ron DeSantis and all the person, you know, Clarence Thomas, but it's like they have a mindset as to they're doing something good. They're doing something for the well-being of their people. It's like we have to get into discussion as to why it's not and shift that kind of point of view to their listeners, to the person's like, well, Clarence Thomas has a point. Maybe, you know, blah, blah, blah. Ron DeSantis has a point for, you know, saying that we should build the prison system next to Disney because Disney happens to be this kind of corporation. It's like, get your message straight. And it's like, it's about giving liberty, life and liberty to women, first of all, because it seems to be that kind of problem as to who dictates how the women live.
Yeah.
Who dictates how the women have their babies? Who dictates how women have sex? Who dictates how women have pleasure? This is kind of that control aspect that comes down from a literal patriarchal society. And it's not just white men. It's all men who want to control their women, it's like just trying to lay down laws and legislation and policy. It's like, we have to discuss with the women in your lives. You'd have to discuss with a group of women and you have to just align yourself with like-minded persons as to how we can better our lives together. So it's a big kind of, I don't want to make it sound like it's like my fairy dust saying, oh, this, it'll all be good. It takes a lot of fucking hard work in order to dismantle issues of birth control, abortion, access to schools, access to books, what's good for our children. It's like, it's a whole myriad, but it's all tied into what it means to be a more equitable society.
Yeah. I'm really worried for my nieces who are teenagers right now, you know, and what we really have to work on empowering them and their understanding of their own bodies. Yep. We don't want sex to be scary.
No.
We don't want it to be dangerous or, you know, have all of these other, you know, ideas that have been sort of thrown at us as young women. But we need to empower them and have them make them understand that they should not be coerced. Mm-hmm. Even into sex. I mean, you know, rape is rape. And then there's also coercion. You know, a lot of young girls end up sleeping with guys because guys just coerce them. I mean, they are relentless sometimes. Yeah. That has to stop as well.
Yeah, no, there's so much social pressure. And, you know, we are fortunate that we didn't grow up in the age of social media, right? So these kids now are just inundated with so many images and videos and this and that, and, you know, how you should look, how you should behave, how you should dress. So it is overwhelming, right? And I do feel sorry for the youth right now because of all of this exposure to things that are really not great, not good for their mental health.
Yeah.
But yes, right. Kelly, you're right.
It's a barrage of information, of stimulation, and the emotional growth. I mean, I'm still learning how to not react so violently or passionately or whatever words I choose to a specific statement. And, you know, for young kids who are just trying to figure out who they are, it's like we need to take that responsibility to say the power of no, the power of I want, and not be ashamed of saying what I want.
Yeah.
And really listening and taking in and saying, I hear you. can you hear me? And having a true conversation. That's yeah. It's, you know, just trying to simplify.
I'll just yeah. use an example of one of my, you know, several of my students have said this to me, but in the semester of my Evolution of Asian Americans in the Media class, one of my students said that this class was one of her favorites that she's ever taken at USC.
Because,
yeah, I know, it's very sweet. She said, because it taught me how to be more of a critical thinker, to do more research, and to empower myself with more information about my identity and who I am. Yeah. And so that to me, as an educator, but also somebody who wants to teach from a place of truth and authenticity. You know, I don't play, you know, hardcore professor and I'm just like an academic. I am real with my students and I try to engage with them. So they're like my kids, right? Because I don't have kids. So I would hope that more young people are exposed to people like us who are willing to just really get real, right? Mm-hmm. About the world and share our experiences so that they're better prepared, you know, to face the difficulties that they're going to face. And they, you know, much more than we ever did probably. But it's a challenge. It's an uphill battle, you know?
Yeah. Really I think we have to always keep in mind that I don't have the answers. I found my answers and I encourage you to find your answers because they're going to be the same, but you may benefit from our experience because it's like circumstance, you know, from the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, 2020s, but there are common denominators in all of those decades. And it's interesting, but just to, again, what Kelly said, empower young women, and again, empower young men as well.
For
them to be able to be free in conversing and listening, because we have to recognize that, you know, it's a common conversation. It's a common, it's a commonality to be able to share, and it's not a male thing and it's not a female thing. It's a human thing.
But I think, Tamalyn, I think this excessive bro culture,
that kind of
has to be dismantled a little bit, because I think that's part of the problem.
We have to come out. People have to come out and say, this is not okay.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and this is not going to be tolerated.
No.
I really hope that these women come forward. If this is a true story, I hope that these women come forward and nail these guys.
I mean, you know, you hope, because then, you know, they can at least get their vindication. But at the same time, I say they shouldn't have to. You know, if they don't want to, they shouldn't have to. Right. Yeah. Again, we can't put it on them to, you know, prove that something horrific happened. And especially in David Cho's case, it's like he fucking said it. He told the story and he was showing off about it.
Right.
Well, he should pay the price for that.
Yeah. And then again, it's like, do you really think is this a singular case?
Of course, if
where
he's
there's
talking
smoke,
about
there's fire.
Like this, I'm sure not.
No. So that's why it's like,
So
anyway,
hey, David, if you happen to be listening, if he started listening, he probably stopped listening after the first 2 minutes of the show. But hey, man, if you're listening, do the right thing, dude. Seriously. You got to do the right thing. Just take responsibility, right? That's what you need to do. Everybody needs to take more responsibility. There's got to be more accountability.
And what can the people on the show do?
I think they're probably pressed between a rock and a hard place, right? Here they are off the heels of this super successful show backed by Netflix and A24 and just getting all these accolades. And then what are they supposed to do, right? Then maybe tear down the show themselves and to speak out about this, you know? But again, I think oftentimes in life, you are faced with, you know, situations where you're going to be tested about when it comes to your values and your ethics, right?
Yeah.
That you have to strip away all this other stuff about fame and fortune and success and money and all of those other things that will, you know, you can't take it with you. You can't take any of that shit with you. But what you can take with you is your character, So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do that's going to show that you have some character?
Right.
Easier said than done, I'm sure. I'm not in their shoes. Right.
Right. And for all of them, any of them to craft a response and not be received 100% totally by everybody is a difficult position. But to be able to recognize the action and to follow up with the recognition of responsibility to correct that action in the future or to address that action and say, what can we do about it? I am open to hear, to listen to what responses are. I don't have that answer, but they do need to answer. They need to say something.
They do.
This is accountability. The exercise in accountability.
Yeah.
And you don't have a perfect answer. And I just hope that it just doesn't lie and, you know, be swept under the rug conveniently.
Yeah.
That's what I hope.
It was the first time in 2014, but I'm not.
That's sure. Right.
I don't think they're going to let it happen again.
Thank you, Aura Bogado, the investigative reporter who put this up on Twitter and, you know, reignited this conversation, to Jen Fang from Reappropriate, and for all the women, really, you know, the majority of them women speaking out, speaking loud about this whole.
I apologize. I think I called Jen Young earlier. So it's Jen Fang.
It's okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, because there's Jen Yang.
I know.
There's Jenny Fang.
Wong. Yeah. I know. Yeah.
There's a lot of Jen.
Of
our sisters. Yeah.
Who are all awesome, by the way. So
exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Well, I think this was a much needed conversation. So we pivoted. Basically, we were going to actually do a different episode, but we decided no. Let's just put that aside and talk about this because it's too important not to address. So I thank you. Oh, look at Eggie. She's like, you guys are done. I need to go outside now. Thank you, my sisters. Of course, always love talking to you about this kind of stuff because we all are, you're so strongly opinionated and we have something to share. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
See everyone next time. Bye, everyone.
Yes, next time.
Bye.